And so we end, as we did last week, with Professor Peter Bernhardt's valiant effort to teach American students about koalas, gum trees and the Australian bush. Did it work?
If you listened to the first half of my story, you knew my ambitious plans. First, teach American students, who were definitely not biology majors, some of the basics of Australian natural history. Second, use Australian species as model systems to explain the fundamentals of anatomy, evolution, ecology, and conservation. History was on my side. If the continent was good enough for explorers from Holland, France, and England, it must be good enough for undergraduates at a Midwestern American university. Right? And so, 15 students and I set off on our own exploration of the Australian plate because Tasmania and New Guinea were included. For the first lecture, I armed them with a platter of Tim Tams. Yes, you can buy them from supermarkets in St. Louis now. That wasn't the only gimmick I'd use over the next 14 weeks either. I started off with a brief history of European exploration and settlement, letting students see illustrations and specimens through the eyes of astonished visitors or their patrons. Here was Sir Joseph Banks and his Banksias, and Don Diego Prado, trying to identify a wallaby before he ate it. I handed out Australian coins so anyone could have a 20-cent platypus or a 10-cent lyrebird. Some students ignored the biscuits and the coins. It would be like that for the rest of the lectures. Following a gentle introduction, I gave them a 2-week crash course in the fundamentals of geology and climate over the past 335 million years. This forced them to learn the states. How else to refer to maps that showed the locations of the Great Dividing Range or Rottnest Island? State birds and flowers provided the quick excuses to introduce iconic species. And what to say about the indigenous humans of mainland Australia? While I used Koori art, ancient and modern, to contrast with European drawings, I try to avoid making generalized statements about their culture. If Dreamtime stories were mentioned, the class was warned they differed with region and language. Perhaps I was a bit too exhaustive, but there was always popular culture to lighten the load. If you want to emphasize the relative lack of recent volcanic activity in Australia, for example, tell them just a little bit about the novel and movie Picnic at Hanging Rock. That's the great film of 1975, not the recent way-off-the-track miniseries. Over the following months, my use of gimmicks to stimulate memory and interest grew increasingly shameless. I never used a laser pointer. I had my Tasmanian Blackwood walking stick to point out features on slides. When we reached the weeks on flora, the naughty professor asked, "Would you like to smell Australia?" I whipped out my vials of tea tree and yellow box oils distilled for me by John Kelly decades ago when he lived in St. Arnold, Victoria. When we looked at native orchids, I shared a little box of pinned thinid wasps, still wearing pollen of spider caledonias on their backs. Those specimens were donated by environmental consultant Dr. Colin Bauer. Now for the game plan. You may remember I had a textbook, Tim Berra's A Natural History of Australia. It was really written for an American audience anyway, so lectures followed chapters. Once we finished the introductory material, I gave them a holiday by the sea. It seemed better to let them meet the stromatolites of Shark Bay before Berra's book surrounded them with hungry sharks and cranky sea wasps. Following some marine fish and invertebrates, I introduced them to the freshwater life in a billabong. The Murray-Darling Basin yielded yabbies and Murray cod. We crawled up onto the land for plants, insects, and spiders, followed by amphibians and reptiles. From there, it was time to meet the mammals, but I started with the placentals, finishing them quickly, then on to monotremes and marsupials. During the last 3 weeks, male emus hatched their eggs while parrot plumage reflected patterns in the ultraviolet. The last lecture focused on honeyeaters and why bell miners would one day rule the world. How did this work out? To be honest, I think I scared the hell out of some of them. Well, it wasn't entirely my fault. Berra's book emphasizes venomous marine animals and 20th century shark attacks. Would I have been honest if I hadn't mentioned infections caused by buffalo horn flies or shown them close-ups of the heads of bulldog ants? Isn't everyone entitled to know the statistics of death from funnel web bites since 1956? It's only 14, after all. Surely they were entitled to learn that there were 106 fatalities due to saltwater crocs from 1971 to 2013. One student was amazed there were Australian ministries that kept such records. Maybe I shouldn't have included that photo I took in 2016 of a family of Chinese tourists standing up on their benches as a big goanna prowled around their picnic table. Midway through the course, I gave the class a questionnaire. The last question asked, "Do you want to visit Australia? Do you want to go now? If so, what do you want to see?" Most of them were still eager. It looks like I stimulated an interest in the wet forests of Queensland and Tasmania, but one student wrote,
"Taking this class makes me want to visit more. I may want to stay in cities to avoid some of the scary wildlife."
Good luck. You forgot the stats about spider and snake bites in suburbia. Aside from Australian colleagues, YouTube turned out to be my biggest ally. I didn't show videos in class. Links were sent as blanket emails, but the longest was 3 minutes in duration. At first, there wasn't much of a response. Then everything changed when they saw a Koori child eat a witchetty grub as if it was a chocolate. A favorite was a study of blue-ringed octopi changing colors as they duelled over a crab. And I didn't dwell on fatalities, so there. It was a student who actually informed me one day of a bird breeder in Florida who was killed by one of his cassowaries in 2019. I emphasize that most of the species we looked at were in far greater danger from humans. The class became well-grounded in how so many woody plants are adapted to cyclical fires and what the skin trade did to koala populations. Perhaps they will remember that September 7th is Threatened Species Day because that's the day the last known Tasmanian wolf died in captivity. If things became a little too disturbing, I could always call upon comic relief from Blinky Bill, the Gumnut Babies, or the Muddle-Headed Wombat. So much for teaching Australia's natural history. Did the students appreciate that Australia offered bigger explanations? A second questionnaire was circulated after the last lecture. Question 7 asked, "Did you learn anything about concepts in the field of biology, ecology, or evolution that you didn't know previously? If the answer is yes, please list or explain the concepts you are most likely to remember."
"The one fact I'll remember is Cope's rule of evolving towards bigger animals."
Close enough.
"I learned the pattern of evolution in which different modern species share a common ancestor rather than transforming into one another."
Yes!
"I have a greater understanding of the geologic timescale, continental drift, and its relationship with animals and plants."
Damn, I'm good!
"First, I thought koala and numbat were the same, and I didn't know there are so many animals and species that were only in Australia."
"Huh?"
"I learned that most species migrated and evolved when coming from Asia."
No! Let me assure listeners the course stressed Gondwana origins and links between Australia and South America via the Antarctic land bridge. Will I ever do this again? Not at St. Louis U, to be sure. I retired the 28th of June, and my wife and I hope to return to Bundoora, Victoria, in another year and a half. Who knows? Perhaps I should be teaching this to more curious new Australians who want to feel knowledgeable in their new environment.
Peter Bernhardt is Professor of Botany at St. Louis. Still,